The subject of discussion today is the state of art for horror.
State of the art.
State of the art for horror. Does that mean we're cutting edge, or we're supposed to talk about the cutting edge? I'm not really sure about this.
Maybe you should let Steve Saffel moderate this panel. Because you're doing a bang-up job so far.
First thing I want to do, as always, is have everybody come through and introduce themselves, starting right here.
My name is Andy Dean. I have had 4 horror novels published. I'm also the singer of the band Bella Morte. Those guys are so good. No, they really are. It's not funny. It's kind of funny. And aside from that, I just finished doing the score for the remake of Plan 9 from Outer Space. I'm getting into film soundtracks and stuff like that. So we can film.
Fist bump.
That's me.
It's gonna be weird.
I used to wear too many rings.
My name is James A. Moore. In addition to being the moderator for this, I write books. Dealt with comic book work, role-playing game stuff. My latest book actually came out from the gentleman next to me, and that's Aliens: Sea of Sorrows from Titan Books.
My name is Steve Saffel. I'm a senior acquisitions editor at Titan Books. We do a wide variety of projects. With James and Chris, I worked on the Aliens books and Tim Levin, who I saw a couple of weeks ago. He says hi. And so we do some horror, but what we do is actually going to be part of what we'll talk about.
I'm Lois Gresh. Is that loud?
No, it
sounds louder here. A New York Times bestselling author, 6 times, about 1 million books out there. I have 27 books altogether, 60 short stories, and I guess I'll just wave one. The latest one, an anthology I edited for PS Publishing, Dark Fusions. It's, as you might guess, mostly horror, dark science fiction, and dark fantasy.
My name is Christopher Golden, and I find it really strange that this whole room vibrates with that weird noise. It makes me feel like we're all going to explode.
Yeah.
It's troubling
to
me. Exactly. He knows we're here. Over the last 22 years, I've written over 100 books in various genres, but the horror people are my people, and horror is always my home. Many of those books have been horror novels, but even the ones that aren't horror novels have horror in them. My latest novel is called Snowblind. It came out in hardcover in January. It'll be out in paperback in November alongside Alien River of Pain, but we'll talk more about that.
Which made somebody a 20th Century Fox cry man tears.
True story.
Hi, I'm Anya Martin, and I'm sorry I was emailing an editor who needed to know something right away.
Was
it
Steve?
Dragon Hunt. No, it wasn't, but Steve was wonderful as my editor for Marvel Age. And for many years in the 90s, he helped me pay my rent. And was a great to work for. I'm a horror writer. I'm also a working journalist. You can read, I have an article in the Wall Street Journal Mansion section today, which I'm sure you'll all want to buy and get me to sign, on fractional homeownership in resort communities, which you all can afford. In any case, I have two recent things I've done is Stuffed Bunny in Dollland, which is in one anthology. I have a story called The Toe in Feet. I did the website, hlretro.com, and I am programming chair of the World Horror Convention. Derek Hayes, who is a wonderful job with this track, is my lieutenant. Is Derek in here? Yeah. So if you enjoyed this track, and some of the people up here with me are actually guests. Chris Golden and Jonathan Nieder is the Toastmaster, so I highly encourage you to go to the table down on the same level as Comics Pop Art Alley, the art show in the Hyatt Regency. Please visit the table and find out more about World Horror. And I'm going to be there this afternoon, right after this panel. I'm going straight over there. I'll be answering questions. I'll have my books, and then I'll be there 4 to 6 Saturday, Sunday, and I think 11:30 to 1 on Monday, if you want to talk to me in specific. But there'll be somebody there all the time, and I think some of you are doing signings there too. So,
so we'll see you all back here in May.
Yeah. Yes, I hope so. I hope everybody will come.
I'm Ann Rice. I write the. Sorry, that's not entirely correct. I'm Jonathan Mayberry. I write the Joe Ledger thriller series, the Rotten Ruin series, and a bunch of other series. I do the B-Wars comic, which is going to television soon. I do the Rotten Ruin comic, which is going, and novels, which are going to film. I do the Joe Ledger series, which is going to television now, which I got that option, so I'm really, really excited. And after conversations with some of my peers who have gone through the Hollywood dance, I'm hoping I'm not actually lying when I say everything's going to television. I actually want to sit and watch that stuff geek out. And my new book, Fall of Night, a zombie book, is debuting at the Missing Volume here at DragonCon. And my latest thriller, Code Zero, takes place at DragonCon. I actually released the zombie apocalypse plague at DragonCon in Code Zero.
Thank you.
So, you only hurt the ones you love.
So there's the merry band. Obviously, what we're discussing is an interesting subject for anybody who likes horror. For some people, they're going to go, what the hell are you even talking about? I don't like Freddy Krueger. I'm going to posit a theory and see what you guys think of it. My theory is that despite the comments that the horror field is shrinking and dying, it's still here. It's just camouflaging itself under other genres.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's start with you, Jonathan.
Yeah, that was true for a while. Horror has had some real hits, you know, up and down. What happened with horror is after they finally decided it was a literary genre in the 70s and so on, then came the slasher films, and they were marketed as horror, and they're really shocked. They're not horror, there's not much suspense there. But because more people see movies than read books, the horror genre got labeled as misogynistic, needlessly violent, you know, thing. And people stopped reading horror books as much as they should. And it's a damn shame because they miss a lot. Recently, because of successful horror movies and horror televisions like American Horror Story, Teen Wolf, True Blood, Paranormal Activity, thank you. And a few other shows, Supernatural, a few other shows and movies that are doing really well, more people have gone back to reading horror. I had a really interesting thing happen recently. When I sold my first novel, I wasn't allowed to call it a horror novel. We had to call it a supernatural thriller, because my agent said, because we actually want to make money. Crazy. Recently, a publisher asked my agent for my next book, which is the Joe Ledger thriller, and one other book. They said, we want him to write a mainstream horror novel. And the editor told me that at the acquisitions meeting, when they were talking about this and ready to make the offer to me, one of the marketing people, swear to God, said, there's this new genre that's getting really hot, and they're calling it horror. And only one editor at the table did not bleed from the pores. You know, the rest of them were, you know. And the editor told me that, and he just couldn't stop laughing. He said, you know, horror, because he's a geek like I am, you know, he's a horror geek. But horror is actually coming back now. It's getting some respect
it's new,
now.
It's fresh.
It's brand new. So I think the state of the art is healthy, and it's getting some respect, and we're no longer the Rodney Dangerfield of the literary world.
I'm going to say I agree with that. I think in the mainstream, it certainly that horror is doing well. Personally, I'm excited on the literary side because I think we're getting some of the best writing we've had right now. There's a lot of books that are out there right now. I think the weird fiction renaissance is particularly exciting, and there will be the first best weird anthology. Like there's been a best horror. Weird is actually coming into its own and branching off a little bit at a time when H.P. Lovecraft is now finally sort of getting into the literary canon. Some people feel good about that, some people may not, but it's certainly rising that fiction up. But I think some of the authors that if you are interested on the more literary side are that you should be reading, people like Laird Barron and John Langan. Simon Stranza's Richard
Ballingrud.
Yes, David Ballingrud, absolutely. Can't believe it's in North Carolina. Let's go to DragonCon next year. So there are a lot, and there's some really exciting women like Livia Llewellyn, Marchesia Burke, who's here as well. I think we're gonna. It's a really, really dynamic time right now. You saw a little bit of the sort of come out in True Detective with Thomas Ligotti and some kind of influence there in the mainstream. Although that was not a weird. I think people wanted it to be weird, and it wasn't really. But it had some call outs there. I think it's. There's just some wonderful, amazing writing, and the last thing I want to say is, what's interesting is, it's influenced not just by the masters of art, such as say Lovecraft or Fritz Leiber, or even Richard Matheson, or so. It's also heavily influenced by literary authors. Many of these authors, like I think that Laird would say right away that Jack London is a huge influence. Herman Melville, Jack Kerouac, Cormac McCarthy. These are the writers that you're seeing, like little, not necessarily, you're feeling them in there. You could feel these writers are really well read. So I think it's just a tremendously exciting time for horror right now.
Just to follow up on that and maybe coalesce some of what both of you said, I'm sorry. I do feel like most of you who love horror probably know that in the like early to mid 1990s, in a glut of really shitty books, which hid the good ones, horror as a genre basically fell apart, and it lingered on for a while, and then it just sort of almost didn't go away completely. It just started to go into the small press and all of that. But I do think that what we saw over the last decade was horror becoming a part of other very successful and exciting genres and subgenres. Paranormal romance, urban fantasy, and thrillers like the things by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child and all of these other things are full of horror. James Lee Burke novels have ghost stories in them. You see all of that stuff, so it never really went away, and now because we have this fantastic, healthy horror, literary horror sort of group that Anya was just talking about, and these other sort of horrific stories and horror and pop culture that's resurgent.
YA horror.
And YA horror, basically what has happened, I think, is that the publishers are looking at it very carefully, and they're taking baby steps, and again with Snowblind, which did very well, the publisher came, the editor came to me and said, we want you to do what you really want to do, which is write us a total straightforward, supernatural horror novel from the heart, everything you want to do, which I was ecstatic about. And I actually think that, led by most of the publishers no longer have and haven't for years had what we would all call a horror midlist, where they're publishing as a part of their program on a regular basis, every month or every couple of months, straight up horror. Titan is actually one of the few publishers who's really doing that, and they're starting to do it more and more. I know Steve will talk more about it, but thank God for Titan and other publishers who are starting to not shy away from it, because yes, we've got the literary horror in this corner, and yes, mainstream publishing is starting to publish a handful of novels in hardcover or whatever that they're saying, yes, these are horror novels, we're not going to pretend they're not, but in order for horror to be truly healthy going forward in the future, you need publishers like Titan that are going to publish straight ahead, paperback horror series. I can't begin to tell you how excited I am for the trilogy you're doing with Mark Morris. So.
I guess you can tell us about that after my. Do you want to do
it now?
No? Okay.
Just build suspense.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe the resurgent horror has been mentioned a little bit in here. I mean, we have had a lot of supernatural horror under the romance guys, for example, but. Another strong area has been in YA, and we're going back maybe 10 years even, if you think about it, if you've read people like Ellen Hopkins, who wrote about really horrific things for teenagers, like bulimia, you know, and cutting and stuff like that. And then from there we went into things like Twilight, which was romance but vampires. And then we had a big surge of vampire novels in horror on television. We had True Blood, we had all that, all kinds of romance. And then we went to zombies. You know, we're going through all the old guys. We haven't done Frankenstein, I guess, yet, you know, the resurgence of Frankenstein and werewolf and the mummy. Like, we haven't had mummy romance, have we? I don't know. I'd be kind of sick. But would she rather be wrapped or unwrapped? Yeah. But if you think of, you know, in terms of young adult, you went right from that more romantic stuff into really hardcore, what would have been adult horror 10 years ago, but it's a young adult horror today. We had The Hunger Games, which, you know, just made my eyes fall out when I read it. I stayed up all night reading it, pitting children in barbaric rings to the death. That was The Hunger Games. And then we had Divergent, another, you know, apocalyptic series that pitted children against adults in the world to the death. Again, there are all these really horrific young adult books. And so I think the readership is just burgeoning, you know, it's just, I mean, I've sold tens and tens and tens of thousands of books to teenagers, and they just can't seem to get enough of horror. So that's what I'll add to, I guess, what's been said here.
Just a quick footnote to what Lois said. For those of you who don't know, they're actually doing a Hunger Games theme park. So if there's anything that's ever called out for a theme park, it's putting a whole bunch of kids in an arena and making them kill each other.
All the evil stepmothers are going to send their kids there.
That's true. That's true. I'm not joking.
That is pretty wild. I mean, actually, the children pitted against adults to the death sounds to me like parenthood.
Yeah.
But now, coming from the publisher's point of view, by the way, I can't talk about the Mark Morris because I'm not the editor on that. The next project akin to that I'm going to be working on is a project I'm talking with Tim Levin about right now. So I got, as a matter of fact, we sat in a pub in London about 2 weeks ago and hashed out many things, both how to destroy the world with aliens and how to destroy the world with supernatural devices. So Tim gets to do it, you know, every which way he can.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, that's...
You went off there with a 10-speed bike.
Yeah. But now, from the publisher's point of view, I've got to say that there are options with horror. We got to keep in mind there are like two different directions. You've got the novels and you've got the short stories. And I think some of the purest horror is probably in the short stories, because I think you can get there tightly, quickly, with maximum impact. And in a way, that is one of the quickest routes to the horrific. I think that when you get into the novels, you're going to have more fusion. And I think that's going to also add to the ability of the sales force, of the retailer, of a lot of people in the entire food chain to get that book to the largest number of people. Literary horror is a completely different animal. I think you can do a standalone novel, but I think that's going to, in many ways, fall into the literary. It's not going to be on the, you know, Supernatural Brothers kind of thing. You're going to see more in the series, which, you know, we were talking about series there. I think you're going to have to see more fusion. Tim Levin got a lot of attention for his Alien novel because he brought the horror conventions to it. But let's face it, that's horror science fiction. And then you get into so many of these, you are horror thriller, horror science fiction, horror romance. I think the paranormal romance really brought a lot of horror tropes to a lot more people. And I think that's important, because when you're a publisher, you are trying to figure out how best to position the writer's book. And so you're talking to your sales force, you're talking to the retailers. I often speak to the guy who buys for Barnes & Noble. You don't as much have impact at Amazon, because frankly,
they throw virtually everything against the wall, and then it's completely up to the work, and to some degree the publisher's marketing. But at Barnes & Noble, you're concerned with the way the cover appears, the way the book is positioned. Actually, there are, you know, even at Amazon, you've got the keywords, the search engines. And the more things that you can use to get to that audience, the better, because you're going to reach more audiences by the, they're called BISAC codes, actually. But it is a challenge. It's a distinct challenge. I know that when we try to sell something strictly as horror, it limits the numbers, at least initially, because the audience is not as large as paranormal, urban fantasy. You know, many of these things that easily could be horror, the Dresden Files, these things have the crossover that that fusion brings more people to the party. That's true, dark fairy tales are, you're right. But again, it's a fusion. And I think that that fusion is where the larger audiences live. That's why you talk about the thriller, although to me that's a little odd, because the thriller, by its very nature, is so general. If all of our books aren't thrilling you, there's a problem. So, now the thriller nature, though, I think is also the ticking clock. You know, I think probably one of the purest forms of horror at the moment might be The Walking Dead, because there's not really a whole lot of fusion in there other than zombies, which are an element of horror. I mean, it's not science fiction, it's present day, it's post-apocalyptic, but the apocalypse was horror. So that's probably one of the purest forms. But that became its own trope with zombies, and we ended up doing very well with Dana Fredsky's Plague Town, Plague Nation, Plague World. However, there, Dana and I are talking about something that is going to be even more of a fusion. And she actually has quite a bit of fusion in there because it's military horror. So, you know, again, that's gonna, to me, I'm talking too much about this, but I think that's where your greatest numbers are going to live. It doesn't mean that there's not a really great opportunity for good standalone literary horror. There, the sales tool will be the book and just the book. Well, and maybe the writer.
I kind of forgot that question. Was it? All the smart guys already went, so I got the stupid hair. Just like the state of horror right now, I think it's awesome, like, that so much stuff's in. It's so cool that there's so much awesome shit on TV right now that we bitch about having awesome shit on TV, like, oh, The Walking Dead sucked this week. Like, we have a zombie show on TV. Like, that is awesome. And it's like, it's not like
it's like
for
the
kids.
Number one show.
Yeah. Totally. And it's just awesome. And the thing I used to have to do when I used to have to read, which we all know is horrible. I'm just kidding. I'm an author. It's a joke. Publisher here is furious.
Lunge over me.
I know. But used to have to go and look for the really extreme stuff in literature, Clive Barker and stuff like that. Like, you know, I've definitely got a bloodlust in my horror stories, and used to have to go find that in literature. And because of the respect, and I guess, you know, you might just say the dollars that are being generated by horror now, we're getting all these amazing artsy horror films like Martyrs and a Serbian film, Human Centipede, all this stuff that stuff did not exist on film until the rest of it got popular. You get so much amazing stuff on the fringe of the genre because of the money going into it. And I also love the fusion of genres myself when I write. I don't so much go outside of horror, but I do enjoy fusing genres of horror. My last novel went from kind of the Deliverance sort of realm into a werewolf sort of thing, and I really enjoy that. But like I said, if there's that much stuff out there that we're bitching about, it something's going well.
So another thing that I've observed, and I could be wrong about this, but hopefully I'm not, otherwise I look like a complete ass and I don't need any help in that department. It seems to me that a lot of the news we're getting right now is a lot darker. And I genuinely believe that's having an impact on the state of the art. I think it's a direct response in a lot of ways to things that we have no control over, like every freaking day in the Middle East.
Right.
Yeah, look, I've been saying forever, and I'm certainly not the first nor the last, but I feel like, let me back up. Many years ago, in an interview in Fangoria, Robert McCammon, I've quoted this a million times, Robert McCammon said the reason he wrote horror, the reason he loved horror was because in horror, you could write about love and sex and death and hate and emotion and taxes and whatever. You could write about aliens and you could write about anything you wanted in the context of a horror story, because a horror story is about being human in so many ways. And so I think there's no question that what we do in horror sometimes is it can operate for me in two ways. One is give me something else to worry about so I don't have to worry about the thing that I should really be afraid of. Or give me something that becomes a lens through which I can view the things that are really terrifying in the world to help me go through that in a sort of cathartic, therapeutic way. I edited an anthology of zombie stories called The New Dead, and which Jonathan and Jim were both in, and that was purely from the perspective of me saying, I think the reason that zombies became so popular is because of Abu Ghraib and us not seeing the bodies coming home from Iraq and knowing that U.S. forces were torturing people and all of these things that are horrific, but we're not really allowed to process the way that we really should be processing them. There are all kinds of things that are happening on a day-to-day basis that we should be way more horrified by than we actually are. Yeah. And so we watch the news and we don't react. We just post it on Facebook. And I feel like if horror is taking a different tact, if we're examining things a little bit more through the genre than we used to, I feel like it's because we're getting worse at addressing them ourselves.
Can I make a couple of just quick observations?
No.
Exactly on what Chris said. Number one, the CDC set up a site using the zombie pandemic as an example of how you should deal with a health emergency. And I thought that was very interesting that they saw the piece of that. And then the second thing is right after 9/11, the observation was we wouldn't want horror. That was just too much. So I think it's really interesting, and I felt like, and there was a pushback, it seemed like we needed something else when there was, but we didn't resolve, my feeling on that is maybe, and I'll throw this out to the panel, did we not resolve all that? And that is why, because we didn't have the therapeutic effect of horror as much at that moment, we tried to step away from that. Did that sort of lay the groundwork for this, all of this unresolved stuff that now opens the door to us coming back and seeing horror in a really horrific way, not just in a sort of lighter, twilighty type of way.
Okay, I just want to say one last thing. Sorry.
Yep.
So, in response to that, I feel like 9/11. I always write about the generation that didn't know the world before 9/11 is a generation that assumes that crises and catastrophes are going to happen. And I grew up thinking that that kind of thing would never happen here. And so that generational divide is amazing. But I also think that post 9/11, we live in a world where, frankly, I don't know about you guys, but whether it be, all the empty reservoirs in the west on the west coast and water problems that have happened in Atlanta or in Georgia in the last couple of years. You can look at all of these different things, all of these crises. Each one of them could lead to basically catastrophic crumbling of our civilization. That's not a joke. I'm dead serious, right? And I feel like this pop culture is dealing with that. And I think that it's, these stories are more popular after 9/11 because everyone went, oh, he really might be completely screwed.
There's the other aspect too that's surging, and that's the crossover and what might be thought of as their dark urban fantasy crossed with horror or whatever. The more psychological, introspective, the weird fiction, literary aspect of it, in which we're looking at, we're so numbed by the real horrors of the world. I know I am. You know, quite often what I'm trying to write about is the human condition is, you know, why are we doing this to each other? Look how it hurts. Look how the small microcosms of hurt affect us. Now, you know, magnify it to this bigger scale that we actually live in. I mean, it's really hard to write anything fictionally that can even approach what's going on in the real world today. So a lot of the modern horror is actually going back into the internal and, you know, expressing the human condition.
Well, that makes sense completely, because the thing is, you've got the shock horror. Oh, I'm sorry, John.
No.
We've got the shock horror, where the whole thing is just, you know, holy crap, and then you're done. And that, to me, I mean, it is horror, but it's not as interesting, because the best stories are about characters. And the fact is that if you build realistic characters, then you as the reader, if the writer has built realistic characters, you as the reader are going to get into that character's skin. And that's where you're going to live the story. And that's where I think that the processing of horror, of real-life horrors, will take place. I think that one reason things like The Walking Dead work is that there's a presentation of a number of characters who could essentially be us, especially here in Atlanta. But the fact is that good horror, good horror is really going to live through the characters. Other than that, you're going to have what I would probably call exploitative horror, which is taking advantage of fears and, again, probably throwing out shock value, because a lot of the more exploitative horror is good, it's cathartic, but it's not really as meaningful.
Yeah, I agree with those points, and I just want to spin something in a slightly different direction with this. A lot of it is also how we approach horror, like what draws us to horror. You know, I'm a little older than Chris, so I was actually, my generation, just slightly before yours, we were paranoid as hell about the nuclear war.
Yep.
So that was fading for a bit, and then 9/11 came along, and suddenly we have the global catastrophe again. And as that fades a bit, I mean, you know, even though we still remember 9/11, it's still, you know, a number of years in the past. Our new threat is you know, a biologic threat, you know, and that's very real. It's very real. But in terms of writing it and what draws us to writing fear and so on, I often get asked why I write about monsters. And my answer is I don't. I write about people who encounter monsters, who overcome darkness. And The Walking Dead is a great example of that concept. The title does not refer to the zombies. The Walking Dead are the people. Their lives have been destroyed. Their affect has been stripped away. They are no longer the living the roles they lived prior to the apocalypse. We all live a certain persona that we project to the world. That's been stripped away. They don't have any of the infrastructure, nothing of the support system. They're stripped down to the basic personality, and people are not used to being that. So they are shambling along trying to find a way to be alive again. And the stories in Walking Dead and in a lot of apocalyptic and post-apocalyptic fiction are explorations of who we really are and how we would survive should there be any kind of a destruction of the world as we know it. It's very frightening to think of what would happen if the things we rely on, if we can't pick up our cell phone and make a call, you know, or you get help or get medical attention, that becomes frightening very quickly. We have Katrina, which to a lot of people was as frightening or even more frightening than 9/11, because they're here in America day after day after day after the crisis is over, and still help is not coming. That's terrifying that it can happen in an American city. So terror is something that we have in our lives now. So writers, since we can't go out there, you know, we're not going to pick up a gun and go fight. We're not going to go, you know, some people went down to New Orleans, not everyone did. But in fiction, we get a chance to explore how we might, or our characters as proxies, how they might respond to these situations. And we get to see all different variations of that. We get to also get to a resolution of that threat.
And by the way, I think that real life is, in some ways, more horrifying. Imagine right now, you're in Northern California, you're in a drought that is already destroying the entire infrastructure of where you live. You're in the wineries and you're seeing the grapes die on the vine. Everything that you've built is disappearing. Every day you're dealing with a fire threat. Someplace in your state, something is burning. Somebody's house is burning, somebody's land is burning, their lives are burning, and then you have an earthquake. Think about that triumvirate that is actually happening right now in our country, and you have the underpinnings of pure horror.
Right, I was going to say that the underpinning, you know, we were talking about the weird is the unfeeling universe. The universe doesn't care about you. So if you're in these situations, in a sense, the weird is worse than now. Well, I don't know. Is it worse if Katrina comes and, you know, or you're in the path of a tornado, you know, an act of, is it worse? But the universe doesn't care. You know, so I think that might be one of the reasons also why we're seeing an interest in the weird. And those characters don't always come out okay. In fact, in that Walking Dead, a lot of characters do not make it. And they don't not make it because they did something wrong. They did something we could have done. You know, any of us, we could make that mistake at that moment. Are you alert every moment? Are you always making the right, you're always watching your back? Really? So you aren't going to walk in front of a car, you know? A car isn't going to come out of nowhere onto the sidewalk.
Based on that, I think that horror is really, at the moment, your very strong catharsis.
Right.
Because I think that at this moment, we are actually living scenarios that are too horrific to think about. And at least the characters in those novels are dealing with something, and at the end of the novel, they do deal with it. And I think there's an element of the entertainment, which is then you inject the supernatural elements, and it becomes just far enough removed from reality that it's entertaining horror. It sort of becomes fun again because you have a zombie, a vampire, an old one, you know, something that is going to eat you, but in real life, probably won't.
No, this is a very quick one. Reality, think about it, versus a horror novel. You know, Ebola is all over the headlines today. It's pretty hard to think of writing a horror story with a biological element more horrific than Ebola. Like, what if you got Ebola? Think about it. God.
I'm already
wondering about that. Or ISIS. ISIS. Can you come up with a military killing system worse than ISIS, you know? So like you say, I totally agree. When you inject something supernatural in there, you are putting a little fun and entertainment back in, because we can sit back, you know, and they, you know, when we have all those horrible headlines in nonfiction and reality, and say, well, it's a little supernatural, you know, maybe it won't really happen to me, you know, there could be an ending that I can live with. I think I want to comment very, very briefly about weird fiction, because I've been in the weird fiction field for like 20 something years, I guess. I think of weird fiction nowadays, and you can all disagree with me if you want, and sort of, I think of it as existential, that we just don't matter in the scheme of things, and, you know, the great universe or whatever, that we're too anthropomorphic, you know, the world doesn't revolve around us. I totally agree with that. And I think the weird component is that it's an existential, dark science fiction or dark supernatural fantasy world. I think a lot of things that are not really horror, they're genre blends. Blends.
I think that of course the real world is going to creep into horror. I think we're seeing a lot of stuff where we're terrified of our neighbors, things like 9/11, where it finally hits home. But even with that, Katrina, droughts in the West, I still think there's a pervasive feeling in the U.S. that we are safe. And I think that's why some of the horror movies that I enjoy are so extreme, and I look for that in films. I do believe that you do need strong characters. I think that's completely accurate. But one of the things I love about horror is like that some guy was like, I'm gonna make a movie about this doctor. He's gonna sew these people's mouths to other people's asses, and we're gonna see where this goes. And I think that's awesome. And people will, you know, they can totally like look down on that sort of horror. But I think the characters in it are great. I absolutely love it.
Feel good movie of the year.
Definitely. No, I'm not gonna say.
But I think for me there's that element of escapism in it. It's not the real world, and I don't think that's out there happening somewhere. And you know, but at the same time, I do find it beautiful, and I grew up watching the stuff, and I do seek it out. And now I'm creating it, and that's.
Don't you, when you look back at Freddy Krueger and all that, doesn't it just seem almost silly?
Well, it really does. Yeah. Well, and you know what happens with every genre? You take the slasher genre, and you take like Psycho, and then Halloween, and you've got some like quality films there, and they always, given a few years and a few jerks, turn into I Know What You Did Last Summer. Everything will become I Know What You Did Last Summer. All these zombie things will eventually become, you know, vampires will become Twilight. There's nothing wrong with that. I think anything that gets 16 billion teenagers to line up on a Tuesday night to buy a book, that's, I don't care how much I don't like it, that is awesome.
Like, one of the things about that, though, and I do agree that when a trope hits a certain point, it jumps the shark, and it then becomes, you know, almost a punchline. One of the things I love about the entertainment business, writing, comics, movies, TV, is that these things are endlessly elastic, and they can be freshened again. I mean, after the 30s and into the early 40s, the classic monsters, you know, vampires and so on, had started to fade out. And then in the late 50s, you had, you know, Christopher Lee come back and do Dracula, and they were cool, and they faded out. And then in the 70s, you had Stephen King and Anne Rice, and they were cool again, and they faded out. And then you get, you know, The Strain, and there's always a new way to reinvent something. As long as, you know, creative folks have good ideas, these tropes are never going to hit a wall and die. And that's what I love about it. There's always something new, some new way to spin a story to make it fresh again.
Well, the key is the right, I think the key is the right quality, because I'm that idiot that, you know, as soon as VHS came out, I'm like, I can own The Evil Dead on VHS. And then I was like, oh, they've got a DVD, I've got to buy that. Oh, a special edition DVD. And then that damn DVD they put out, and they said it was widescreen. They were, this asshole tricked us. They just chopped the movie. I didn't know anything about that at the time. They chopped off the damn top and the bottom of the movie and put out the wide. I was like, I didn't know it was widescreen, so I bought that. Then I bought the Blu-ray, and then I bought the special edition Blu-ray. If you write something good, idiots like me will continue to buy it forever, no matter how popular or unpopular the genre is.
You realize they have your name on file.
Oh, they do. I want stock, just something.
I just want to jump back for a minute to. A while back in the conversation, Steve was talking about how at the end of a lot of these stories, everything gets fixed. And I just wanted to say that sometimes, especially now, that doesn't happen. Probably the most unsettling horror novel I've read in the last 10 years or so is The Road by Cormac McCarthy. And in a weird way, I think there's a relationship between The Road and Walking Dead. Keep talking about The Walking Dead as if it's fantastic. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's really boring. And you know, so it reminds me of that scene in Stand By Me when they're talking about Wagon Train. You know, oh, Wagon Train, they never seem to get anywhere, they just keep wagon training. And sometimes The Walking Dead is like that. You know, how many seasons were we in the prison? But at the same time, before I say this, is there anybody here who's going to be pissed off about a spoiler? Because if you haven't watched it already, you should leave the room. The scene in which, now I forgot her name, I just had it in my mind before.
Carol.
The scene in which Carol shoots that girl is the most horrific thing I've ever seen on television. And you don't see it happen. And that's about the emotion. It's about the circumstance that's set up for you to feel what you feel when that happens. To me, that's what horror is. It's that moment, that's horror. Circumstances, the zombies, all of that stuff is just window dressing. It's that moment where, that human moment, what would you do? Like when you're forced to ask yourself, what would I do in that circumstance? So I feel like if we're talking about what's good in horror, you know, that show is not always good.
Well, I think, by the way, I think you're
but
right.
That moment.
Yeah, I do think that you're right in that the most horrific thing, the most horror today comes to some resolution. Not necessarily everything works out, but it comes to a resolution, which is why real life horror, we can't, there is no real resolution to 9/11.
Right.
There's definitely no resolution to global warming. As a matter of fact, we're gonna find that out more and more every day.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact is that a lot of horror that is the most popular has the characters coming to some level of resolution, and a lot of times it's because we like those characters, so we want them to succeed. But I do think that the deepest horror is horror without resolution.
The horror that can't be unfucked.
And that is the most, that is the most pure horror. And that's where you leave the fusion a lot.
And I just wanted to say the obvious line after what Chris said, horror is an emotion, as Doug Winter said.
Yeah.
I think that that always comes back to me at the end of the day. There's horror that might be an adventure story, or kind of a soap opera, or, you know, Thinking Dark Shadows, or whatever. But there's the horror. It is, well, actually, even if you go to Dark Shadows, the most, and we're going, the thing is that it's the horror of actually being the vampire, which has been lost, or was lost for a while. And that's what made the sensitive vampire a powerful thing for a while, until it became cool to be a vampire suddenly. But Barnabas didn't want to be a vampire, right. He wanted to be human. When his fiance, this was cut out of the movie, the two things cut out of the movie, when his fiance found out he was a vampire, he was no talking to her. She went and threw herself off a cliff.
Is the Johnny Depp movie?
I'd say it was not in the Johnny Depp movie. That's what they cut.
I didn't think Dark Shadows was in that movie.
This is Dark Shadows. I didn't think Dark Shadows. Why Dark Shadows wasn't in that movie.
Yeah,
in that,
right.
And Dark Shadows is just a soap opera. But, I mean, just imagine. The love of your life is running away from you because she thinks you're a monster and she throws herself off a cliff. If that's not some
but
level.
But you see, that's the horror romance fusion.
Right.
Because it's the mm-hmm. ultimately unrequited, unrequitable romance.
Right. And then his father is the one that chains him to the coffin. So if you saw the movie, you'd think it was Angelique. Who cares, a witch? His father chained him in that coffin. And that's why Dark Shadows, I think that's why Dark Shadows was popular in the day. It really, that it actually did get to a human. Well, there's that too.
There's another slight trend that I'll know when you guys can argue or whatever. In that the anti-hero is now popular again, like Breaking Bad. You know, we want to root for the under guy. We want to root for the guy who's got substance abuse and all. We like him. We identify with him because we're also downtrodden. You know, White Collar was another. These are like television shows that are really, really popular. He's a thief. You know, we love him. You know, these things. You know, Breaking Bad is the biggest.
Well,
one
we don't want to give any spoilers, but I mean, it's very hard to say it. But what made I just watched that show for the first time this week. And the thing is that you have Breaking Bad is that the characters have to live with what they did.
The consequences.
There you go. I guess I would say nothing else. Nothing else. These are characters that could have been maybe you or me in the beginning. There's somebody we might recognize, somebody we might know. But then they do. Circumstances, things happen, and they have to live with what they did. And that's a level of horror.
I think you should cover your ears on it because I'm about to spoil a part of Breaking Bad.
But I've seen the end.
Oh, you've seen
it. I've seen the end. I'm being respectful of that.
You
can kill him. You can kill him without me.
If you haven't watched Breaking Bad, only the biggest plot point in the whole thing. But if you know anything about the show, you'll know this.
Yeah.
Breaking Bad is horrific because, for us watching it and for the character experiencing it, Walter White thinks he's a good guy.
I know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, yeah. not for.
But he struggles with this idea of his self, of his own self-image, his perception of himself as doing everything bad for the right reasons.
Right, for about 2.5 seasons,
right.
And then he actually embraces that side. He no longer thinks he's a good guy, but you know, by season 3 or 4, he knows he's going south. You know, so.
But there are still lines in that last episode, which I just watched, that still, I think he does still sort of.
I don't think he thinks he's a good guy.
No.
Toward the, keep your fingers in yours.
No.
what he discovers is that he still has compassion for
right.
people. So it's his love of them, not his feeling of I'm a good guy in you know fighting this fight. He knows he's bad, but no one is entirely any one thing.
Humanity.
You know, there's always elements of something else.
Which is what makes the most beautiful depth in characters.
Yeah, exactly. But circling back to horror just for a second, because I can help break the man all day long. One of the things about horror, we've had a couple of folks who throw out definitions of horror, but that's one of the things about horror. There is no definition of horror that is a blanket term. Right now I'm editing an anthology of young adult horror, and we've got everybody in that from R.L. Stine to Ellen Hopkins. And you know, Ellen Hopkins, technically, you couldn't categorize her stuff as horror by conventional marketing wisdom, but if you've read it, it is horrific stuff. It's horrible stuff. Peer pressure, if you're a kid, is horrifying if you're that kid. But not everyone finds the same things horrifying. There are people who are terrified by the slasher with the knife thing. You know, I'm a 6'4", the guy who's been in martial arts for 51 years. Slasher with a knife? Fuck you, I'm gonna kill you.
When you get back up off the floor,
yeah.
You can discuss this.
a computer hacker who hacks a delivery drone and puts something in there that's not what you want delivered, that scares the crap out of them. You know, so everyone has different things that frighten them. And horror is so beautifully elastic, it allows for everyone's definition of horror. Everyone finds something else scary.
I love that. You just basically said that Amazon scares the shit out of me.
That's a whole other panel. If you're an author in Chet, for instance,
it's almost time to wrap this up, so starting over here, I'm going to ask everybody to deliver your final statements.
Oh, crap.
Can we just take questions?
Let's take questions.
I guess I'll just say, if you're gonna show up to a panel and you're gonna have a noisy baby, I'm not pinpointing anybody. Sorry, guys. I think the beauty of horror is that I can watch something like The Changeling or The Others, and it is subtle, and the only thing scaring me is a door opening by itself, and that will chill me to the bone, even though I have zero belief in the supernatural, and then I can turn around and watch a Serbian film and just get mind fucked in the exact opposite direction. And the genre is limitless. And keep in mind that regardless of my opinion or anyone else's, like what you like, you're correct. If you like it, it's good. There is no rule on that. So,
yeah, it's my comment on Anne Rice's recent retelling of the werewolf myth. Is that really horror?
Well, sure it is. She finds some of it scary, some of our readers find some of it scary. But again, it's horror may not, scaring people may not be the point of some horror writer's writing. Not everything is meant to be scary. I mean, Fright Night, if you ever saw the original film.
Yes.
It was hilarious, and kind of a little scary, but mostly hilarious, but it's still horror. Shaun of the Dead is horror, even though it's mostly zombie. So it doesn't have to be terrifying to be horror. Horror is too elastic for that.
But it can also be subtly disturbing and eat into you over a period of time, which I found with some stories and some of the best stuff that I've had experiences that they bother me. Like, months later, I'm still bothered by it. Maybe I'm more bothered than when I actually read it.
I think this may mean that horror is the most personal genre.
Absolutely.
No question.
Absolutely.
And also the most personal. But let me just, before you guys ask that question, because it didn't come up and it didn't occur to me before, if you haven't watched it, have Netflix, one of the most disturbing, horrifying things you will ever see in your entire life, and I'm not usually into anime, but if you haven't watched it, go watch Attack on Titan.
Yes.
Attack on Titan is the most disturbing, unsettling thing about the human condition. It's amazing. You've got to watch it.
Way, way back there. Well, they've got a great thing going with video games because they can effectively give you a very high-quality movie and immerse you inside of it.
Yeah, and let you participate in the storytelling by going more, you know, directing more films.
I think it's brilliant, and I love the stuff when it's done right. I wish I had time to play the games, but if I did that, I'd never write again. That's not the truth. Most of the people up here about as worked as me, and my personal answer is no, it just makes me want to do better.
Yeah.
You have to tell us what the movie was now.
Come on.
It was the first
Kurt
movie.
All right,
yeah, that was
actually
a damn solid movie.
See,
but
the first one
was
solid.
But there, most of us can point to specific works, you know, books, movies, and so on, that absolutely compelled us to write horror. Stephen, Sam's Law, Stephen King, there's a scene that so many horror writers love where Straker is offering up a child and they never get to explain what happens. All the line is, it became unspeakable, with no other explanation as to what that meant. That line so riveted me that it was like an electric shock. You know, I had to go right, So it's more often not something that shakes our confidence as much as gets our ass in a chair and typing.
This happened, and it was good, but I want to make it better.
Not better, just do my own.
Yeah, I mean, I write about characters very, very infrequently in my entire career. If I ever set out and thought, okay, I want to scare the shit out of them. I have, but that's almost never my goal. I want the fear to come from the circumstance, from it being, you know, from because you're invested in this character, and you do not want this horrible thing to happen to this character that is... You know, or because what I've introduced is so, you're talking about Salem's Lot. For me, the scene, I assume you've all read it, if you haven't, shame on you. The scene where Ralph Glick comes to the window is, and I totally ripped it off. Well, not totally, but some of it is off.
You
heard it from me.
An homage.
Yeah.
No, I mean it's not at all the same scene, but it's inspired by it because it just reflects on your fear when you're a kid of the tree branch scratching the window, you know, late at night, and you're you know, that fear is what you want to instill, but I never or almost never set out to it. And I have to say actually that I think that if fear alone is your goal, you're starting in the wrong place.
I agree.
You gotta start with the character because the greatest fear is gonna come only if the reader is afraid for someone.
I have to agree with, it's incredible where we've come from, because I grew up in the 80s, so I grew up with Freddy and Jason and stuff, and now seeing where we are now, it blows my mind incredibly. You know, we've got a Hunger Games theme park coming out, but we also got a zombie theme park coming out. And it's just incredible that we've gotten to that state.
The lines move really slow at the
zombie. Well, there's something. The Atlanta Zombie Apocalypse, if y'all haven't been to it, which is an experiential fact that you better be moving fast. You are actually running from the zombies, and it is not a haunt. It is an experience. It is a labor of love, and you should all come back to Atlanta and go to it. A few people here know what I'm talking about.
My question is, seeing where we've come from then to where we are now, where would you like to see horror go from here? Where are there areas that we haven't gone to yet that you would like to see it go?
It can't be a blanket answer because there's so many different ways it can go. you know, to answer personally, I would like to see more horror writers explore folkloric monsters. You know, rather than even though I write vampires and zombies and werewolves, I would like to see them dip into the versions of monsters that appear in folklore and world myth, because there are a lot of them that haven't been touched and played with that are just so creepy and so interesting and such great storytelling potential. And it allows you to surprise the reader while at the same time having fun, doing the research and doing the writing. So I'd like to see more of that. What's your guess?
I think the global. I'd like to see more global and more stories from different ethnic backgrounds, stories from women's, from a realistic female character's point of view. Things like I think that what we're seeing with the weird right now, the is going to go in some interesting directions. There's an argument that the weird doesn't work in long form, and I'd like to find out. I want people to try, to try to see how far does it work in long form in the novel.
I have answers to that. Ramsey Campbell's novel, The Grin of the Dark.
Oh,
yeah.
Amen.
One of the scariest things we've ever read.
Yeah.
And definitely in that.
Yeah, I want to see more of that, and I want to see. I want to see people exploring new territory that I've thought of. That comes down, but it does come down to characters. And in fact, that's what I want. I don't want to read books that are just about an effect.
Right.
I want to read books that are grounded in very strong characters and circumstances, and maybe they take real life stuff and they put them through a totally different lens and talk about it in a way that we can't maybe talk about it or experience it in other ways,
I mean, look, ideally, I'd love to live in a world where the stink of the glut of crap from the early 1990s has finally been, faded away, and we can see publishers embrace horror again. There's so much amazing writing being done in the genre, and so I'd love to see that. As far as topics, subject matter, I think that we're on the right course. I think that we're reflecting the world around us and the fears of human beings, and that's what, to me, for me, that's what I'd like to see more. Of course, I always want to see more folklore monsters as well, because that's one of my things that I personally want to see. But really, for me, I just want people, to write about characters. The only thing I'll add is that I desperately wish and. I desperately wish that The Strain were not so cheesy. It's tasty cheese.
Yeah.
It's a very cheesy
show.
It's
so cheesy. I expect so much more from the people involved in making this thing. And I watch it and I enjoy it. And then, what's his face? Who's the main character? Who's from House of Cards. I love that guy, and I love everything that's in the show. But there's had they done exactly the same thing with the same monsters and just not had it be, there's a lot of tongue in cheek stuff.
Well,
in there.
Also, did you like stuff in that show? Like, I do not buy the relationship of the ex husband and ex wife, and the kid, dad.
Because it's shorthand. It's shorthand.
It's they're just they're
lazy.
The book
as well. Yeah. But the opening in the book, that scene about that airplane, which evokes Dracula, is much more powerful than they put onto the small screen.
Yeah.
And I watched the first episode because I wanted to see how they were going to do it. Could he pull it off? And I was disappointed with that. But I think it is a big missed opportunity because I think there is a great opportunity to
I'm glad it's on and I'm glad it's successful because it's horror. But it was a huge opportunity to advance. Where is the horror version of Breaking Bad? And you tell me it's The Walking Dead, I disagree.
No, I think it hasn't come yet.
Right.
And
right.
I think it's going to come, but it has not come yet.
Because I think to some degree the horror version of Breaking Bad is Breaking Bad.
Right.
And basically, he is a monster.
Yes, no question.
And that's the whole idea. That's one of the reasons I think it worked, is that he is a monster and eventually embraces that he is a monster.
Yeah, I mean, was there a more horrific line on television in the last 5 years than "I am the danger, I am the one who knocks"? I mean, that's a classic horror line if you've ever heard of.
But horror doesn't have the supernatural. I mean, Silence of the Lambs won the won the Oscar and was a horror movie, right?
Yeah.
You know what's interesting?
After he kind of jumped the shark, because Thomas Harris was going to about the actual Red Dragon
The interesting thing in Breaking Bad is that I don't think he starts out, you know, as a monster per se. Maybe it's been stewing in him all this
time.
That's the horror, because we all have this inside of us. So if you're a mild-mannered librarian or, you know, high school chemistry teacher or whatever you are, this could happen to you.
I don't think we're all sociopaths. I mean,
he turns into a werewolf, he kills his wife, it's a big
and
thing.
And having, and sociopaths at the end of the day do not have empathy, and he did care. Which is the horrible Shakespearean tragedy of it.
We are actually officially 10 minutes past our end.
Thanks.